I would like to introduce the first speaker, Kevin R. from the Back to Basics Group of NA in the ICANA area of Narcotics Anonymous.
And he showed up just in time.
As usual.
I'm an addict. My name's Kevin.
Kevin.
Well, that just happened real quick. I wasn't ready for that. It's an honor to be here. Apologize for the timing. You know, it's not plugged into the correct sequence here for getting over here to the spot when I needed to be. And there was some bacon involved and sausage. So. It's like, do I have enough time to grab breakfast before? I'm like, you gotta try, you know. I'm just grateful to be clean. You know, I'm grateful to have the life I have today. Obviously, very grateful for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'm really glad to be around, you know, the guys that I'm around this weekend. You know, a couple guys just got here a little bit ago. A couple guys we come, you know, yesterday. And you know, I was taught a long time ago that the way, you know, that I best express my gratitude is whenever I try and do something, give back in some way, whether it's, you know, cleaning up a coffee pot at my home group, which is kind of like the job I take on, because it's hard to mess up cleaning up a coffee pot. You know, if you make the coffee, you got to sit there and look at everybody's face whenever they take that first taste, and they're like, you know, but you clean up, nobody bothers you when you clean up the coffee pot. But, you know, doing something for Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and this is one of those things that we get asked to do from time to time, and, you know, I'm grateful, I'm glad to be able to do it. I just absolutely love this place and this event. It's something that really has enriched my recovery and enriched my life. You know, I met Greg up here a long, long time ago, I'm pretty sure. I reconnected, you know, with a lot of people up at this particular retreat and this event. You know, I mean, I was fortunate enough to be clean when they started this retreat, and to be at the first couple of them, and then I, you know, if there was a few years I didn't come up to it, but you know, when I got the call from Keith, you know, I was just, you know, just flattered and honored, and you know, I'd do anything if they asked me to, you know, help out and do clean up or sit at a table and sell shirts or whatever. I mean, I would pitch in if they asked me to, you know. So speaking is pretty easy. I don't always do well with, like, topics, you know. You know, because, like, when I prayed this morning, you know, I just asked God to help me carry an Narcotics Anonymous message. You know, I think that for me, sharing about recovery is done most genuinely whenever I just pray, turn it over, and just let some things come out. You know, for the purposes of this particular meeting, you know, they asked to share about traditions 2, 3, and 4. You know, one thing I know about the traditions is that I really believe in them. I believe that the traditions have helped make my recovery pathway a little bit easier by learning and trying to incorporate principles of the traditions into my own personal life, my own personal program of recovery. You know, I definitely believe without the traditions, we would be in deep, deep stuff, you know. You know, I kind of regard myself as a someone who you know is interested in NA history and study NA history and going back into the way that our fellowship came to be what it is. There were a lot of struggles, and in particular, you know, before there was a strong application of traditions, we faltered. You know, we didn't survive, and we didn't prosper as a fellowship and as a way of life. And there was a lot of struggle in there. And so because I value this way of life and I value how I'm able to have this way of life through Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I am grateful that the traditions are there because it keeps this possible for me and for all of us, you know. You know, what they put little catchy things on there. Tradition 2, surrender. You know, this is the... unity comes after the first tradition, you know, but, you know, this tradition in my life talks about our ultimate authority, you know, and something that's happened to me in my personal walk, my personal journey of recovery in this last year is I've gone from a member of Narcotics Anonymous that has sort of had this faceless, nameless God, right, to a person who has developed a very, very powerful and more specific relationship with God. You know, for many years, I tried to incorporate daily prayer back into my life. I had gotten away from that. And a friend of mine and I, we were both in different little places in our journey, and he was in a place where he was really trying to connect with sponsorship and make it a habit to call a sponsor, you know, more regularly. And I was in a place trying to really, you know, incorporate the 11th step into my life in a more, you know, regular fashion, not just, you know, like whenever I'm ready to knock someone out or, you know, my wife's on my nerves or my kids are pushing me to the limit. You know, those become like the foxhole prayers when you got some recovery in your life, you know. So we challenged each other to every morning, because sometimes it's kind of cool. You get with one of your people, guys were usually competitive, you know, I want to like outdo you or whatever. And so the deal was, you know, every day he would call his sponsor and every day I would pray. And he had the prayer thing down, you know, and I had the sponsor thing down. So, and then we'd text or call each other to confirm that we did that, you know, to kind of keep each other accountable. And at some point, I think he dropped off on the daily call of the sponsor. You know, I'm pretty sure he did. But what happened for me was that it made me more purposeful in my prayer and my process of praying. And that took effect for a number of years. And I was praying, you know, a bunch of prayers. And some of it was just almost like I was checking my box for the day. Like, okay, I got connected with God. I prayed, you know. So some of it became routine. And I would always finish, you know, my prayer up to that, up till last winter, really, with this request, you know, for to help me, you know, be mindful of the knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry it out, you know. And in my mind, I was like working that 11th step for that day, but I was missing the whole first part of the 11th step, you know, to seek through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact. That part of it was not on the table. I was just worried about knowledge of the will and the power to carry it out, you know. And so amazing things happened to me last year that are completely a direct result of Narcotics Anonymous and the power that God has placed within this fellowship. That it was almost like the God that I've come to believe and feel in my heart, like rolled out a red carpet, leading me directly from where I was at to Him. And it involved going to hear one of our predecessors give a lead. And, you know, it's funny because I'll jump around a little bit. Like the fourth tradition talks about, you know, you know, it's early. I haven't had finished my first cup of coffee yet, but about you know, other groups of NA as a whole, you know, that were autonomous. And this particular group had started at a place that I had issues with. You know, I was very stern about this. That a group, well, first the organization created its storefront and its spot. And I had my eye on it because I'm involved in some outside enterprises that are related to what we do. So what is that? Related facility or outside enterprise? And because of the seat that I had at that table with that outside enterprise, I was aware that this organization was forming and that part of their mission was to start NA meetings and to migrate existing NA meetings to their spot, to their address. And I was like very put off by that. And maybe I should have been. I don't know. You know, but I was. It's just tell my story. And so I wouldn't go to meetings at this place. Strangely enough, you know, the word harmony is in the name of this outside enterprise. And so imagine your people in my life that care about me, and I'm angry about a place that has the word harmony in its name. You know, that's kind of ironic, isn't it? But that's how we are. That's how I am. I'll dig my heels in. And, you know, I will not go to meetings at that place. I know too much. That's what I would tell these guys. They're laughing back here because they know I would tell them that shit. That's how I'm making my statement. I'm not going to try and influence newcomers and put my thoughts into their head. I will just lead by example. This isn't like 10 years ago. This is like 10 months ago. By the way, you know, I'm fortunate and very, very blessed to have been on this journey for a while. My clean date is January 7th of 1990. And, you know, this has just been an amazing, amazing life that's only been made possible by Narcotics Anonymous and God. And I say that to you at this juncture because it's like, you think that, like, after being around a little while, you work through your stuff, you know, you did a 4-step and a 6th and 7th, and you try to practice 10 in your life, and, right? You know. You know, like, but people will say sometimes, you know, my clean time doesn't equal my recovery. That's true for me. You know, that's true for me. So there I was, angry about a place with the word harmony in its title. And so I get this opportunity to go hear this predecessor share. And strangely enough, it's a person who I've really come to admire. You know, I've known for a while, yet I had never heard this person speak. And so I was at odds. Boy, was I fighting it. Man. This is how bad it was. His story was in the basic text up to edition 5, by the way, if you're wondering what I'm talking about. I leave work, and my other friend who was trying to talk me into going there, there's a couple of them, because my thing was, well, I might have to work late, so I don't think I can go. Then I'm like, I left work, I'm like, well, I've got to run to Sam's Club for work. I had to do a little thing for the next day. And I'm like literally in Sam's, and so, well, if I get done at Sam's Club, then I'll let you know. And I'm out of Sam's, and I'm driving toward the place, and he's texting me, and I said, I'm still not sure if I'm coming. Like, I was fighting it to the very end. Yeah, to the very end. And I went, and it wasn't one of these, like, sky-parting leads, right? Which maybe I was expecting because of who the person was that was sharing. They were in some pain in that particular spot in their life that they were going through, and they were talking about how they were getting through that pain. And the focus was about their relationship with God. And I left that night, I left that meeting, and I was like, wow. Like, this person who I was expecting sky parting, right? Because of who they are, who I thought they were, you know, and how long they've been doing this and what they've done for Narcotics Anonymous. And it was a very simple, non-fiery, non-kind of simple message that was all about walking through pain, which we have to do here, right? If we want to stay here and stay clean. And the power that the God of their understanding had to get through that pain. And the next morning I texted him and thanked him for his message. And he texted me back something that was just amazing. And it was like one of those things that like just like got my attention. I was like blown away. You know, I guess that, well, and what he said was, he said something to the effect of, wow. Oh, I asked him. I said, thanks. And I said, hey, if you get a chance sometime, I'd like to hear more about how you developed your relationship with your higher power. You know, I've been really, for a couple of years, praying, you know, on this 11th step, and I just feel like I'm missing something. And to back up a minute, too, like, it was about this time last year, maybe into the fall, I started feeling God was missing something. And I said, I go out of town for work, and I'm like, I hear these things about, you know, Tinder, and I'm married, you know, by the way, and I love my wife and my kids, and I feel like I have a great life, but I'm feeling like I'm missing something. And then I'm thinking, so that those thoughts are going into my head whenever I'm sitting in a hotel room in Harrisburg or State College. You know, I had this goal that I wanted to achieve at some point in my life, and I reprioritized, and I put that goal on the side, and I'm thinking I got to circle back to that goal because I'm missing something. And what I realized through this experience I'm talking about is what I was missing, that missing, and I was missing something. I was missing that improved relationship with God and my understanding. That's what I was missing. And so when I said to this person, hey, maybe sometime we can get together, you can tell me more about your relationship with God, he was like, wow. Brother, before I spoke last night, I prayed that God would help use me as an instrument to lead someone to Him. And boy, has He ever. And something like the opportunity to connect a beautiful man like you with God is an honor and a privilege. Something like that. You know, and it was very genuine. And I was like blown away by it. So I mentioned this just because it's part of my story. And when I think about that fourth tradition, well, I started out somewhere, second tradition, God, ultimate authority. I guess for me, that's taken on a different meaning now that I have a more closer relationship with God. And I have a stronger belief and faith in God. It's like that fire, like our fire last night that I almost put out. You know, I knocked a teepee over and the guys were looking at me kind of funny. But it's like the fire. The relationship with God is like the fire. I've got to take care of it. I've got to nurture it. I've got to put the right amount of logs on it. I can't put too many logs on it because it'll extinguish it. But you can't let it go out either. You know, you got to put the right amount on. And so now that I have this improved relationship with God, you know, things like the second tradition mean a little bit more to me, mean something different to me. You know, I look at it like this where, I'm looking at a bunch of people here, and I know a lot of you, and we've all wore the different hats in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I've been the pain in the ass home group know-it-all that because of my particular study of the traditions, and perhaps my clean day precedes yours, you really need to listen to what I'm saying. Right? I've been that person. I've been the home group member that doesn't come for, a few weeks. And when I come back, the group makes a decision. I'm like, no, you can't do that. How were you at, Kevin? You know? I've been that member that has inconsistent membership, going months and months and months, perhaps years, without being an active home group member in the way that I was taught to be an active home group member. So I wore all those hats. And so in the group conscience, you know, the loving God that's expressed in our group conscience, I have to be first and foremost in my heart mindful that it's not about opinion. It's not about what I think. You know, it's about group, and it's not even about my relationship with God. I bring that to the table as a member of the home group, but it's about our collective relationships with God as we experience them. And, what I believe about this tradition, and really all the traditions, what's our like thing here? Oh, we got time. Yeah, it's okay. Is that contrary to what I thought earlier in my recovery, I don't really think we could break Narcotics Anonymous. I don't think it's breakable. I don't think that any one particular, event. Like, you know, such and such group, they printed a T-shirt and it's got praying hands on, or this and that. And this group, they allowed the church to donate a cake that was left over from their spaghetti dinner and you can't accept outside donate. I don't think any one little thing is going to break Narcotics Anonymous. You know, speaking as a person that's felt broken, right, which I believe we all have, I've experienced the power of resiliency. I've experienced the power of being broken and coming back together as an individual. And I think that the things that I've done to myself and that have been done to me in the situations of my active addiction and other places that I put the predicaments I found myself in, and the fact that I'm able to stand here today and be somewhat, you know, coherent and be able to share and to feel and experience and have friendships and love, if that's possible. You know, we don't do nearly the damage to Narcotics Anonymous that we did to ourselves. And I used to be one of those members that thought, you know, it's a violation of tradition four. Look at chapter six and paragraph two. And I was that kind of member at one point. We need to go to area service and talk about this. We're going to solve this. We're going to take them off the meeting list. You know, I was that guy. I'm not that guy anymore. And if you're that person, that's cool. You're allowed to be there. They let me be there. You didn't kick me out when I was in that spot. You know, but I really think it's hard to break Narcotics Anonymous. And so That's just where I stand now. But boy, you couldn't have told me that. And I stayed up till 3 a.m. typing the policies. Anybody know someone like that? If you're not laughing, you're probably that person, you know. Fuck this guy. I think he is talking shit on me. Because that was me. I did it. I'm talking about me. And if it's you, it's you. You know, but that getting into that space with the group conscious and making decisions. And I spent some time, I mentioned a little bit ago, where I wasn't practicing this way the way that I was taught. And when a miracle reoccurred in my life, where I felt, you know, the touch of Narcotics Anonymous on my shoulder and in my heart, and I got to the place that I wanted to be a part of this, because that was important. You know, you couldn't handcuff me to my commitment to the fellowship, but it had to be one I stepped towards myself. I became part of a home group that was a beautiful home group. It was beautiful and crazy, you know, and it taught me so many things. And then I remember, like, you know, I had a clean date. Okay, I had 20 years clean when I joined this home group, over 20 years clean. And I would go to meetings and either, you know, before I joined this group, and either right around where I live, by the way, and either people wouldn't know me because they're people that are newer, or, hey, are you getting a key tag? Are you speaking? You know, I was like that kind of drive-by member, I call it. And so all of a sudden, you know, I get, you know, touched by. I was fucking desperate. I was doing stuff like breaking doors down in my house. You know, my wife would say, you know, that door's still broke. It won't open up right. Boom! Broke it down. You can go in there now, you know. Remember I said clean time recovery for me don't always equal each other? Like, that's the stuff I'm talking about. You know, where my teenage son was acting up in a store one time, and he ran the buggy into the back of my legs. Being a 12 or 13 year old kid doing stupid shit like that, and I looked at him and I wanted to take that buggy and just hurt him with it, but instead I spit at him. Who the fuck does that? At 20 years clean, I've arrived, right? You know, multiple years, you know. Like, you know, if I was being honest with myself, I would have, like, scratched out the serene on the key tags that I would get every year, you know, and just put clean. You know, he's clean. But serene wasn't happening. It wasn't part of my life. So when I made that decision to recommit myself, and I had that desire, you know, the desire that the third tradition talks about, and not just the desire to stay clean, but to be in recovery, I joined this home group. And it was, you know, we had ups and downs. We had, you know, like, so this is about the time that vaping entered into the world, you know. This is like 2009. But the first time I saw someone pull one of those out, I'm like, are they smoking crack at a meeting? What the fuck is this? Like, because I wasn't going to meetings for a while. I'm like, do they do this now? Because like, I heard like, what the fuck is that? I had no idea. The first time I saw a vape was at the Thursday night meeting in McMurray. And there was this kid, Brian, who whipped this thing out and looked a little... So we had this home group, and all these young kids vaped, you know, and you know they all had things that was like the size of this can here carrying around, like, whoosh, you know. We went through this whole thing with like smoking, not smoking, chewing tobacco, and my thing was just like, well, let's ask the church. No, we can't ask the church. Well, it's their church. Like, and I would say, if they're okay with it, I'm okay with it. Really, I wasn't, you know. Like, there's nothing I loved more than sitting in a meeting and having, like, you know, a big cloud surround me that smelled like Captain Crunch, okay? Or, you know, watermelons, Jubilee, or whatever. You know, what's that? That's cherry blossom, you know. Get the fucking shit out of here. So I did have an agenda, but I thought I would, like, you know, outsmart them and say, let's ask the church. So, but you know what we did? We prayed. We prayed. And I think, you know, people had veins popping out of their neck during the prayer, but we prayed. We had, and we sat down, and we shared, and we talked, and ultimately, and the vote was probably like, well, what did we have? At those days, well, we'd have like 20, 25 people as active home group members. Every group conscience was like huge. And it was like, you know, I don't know, like 13 against 12, you know. And the next thing you know, we had a big signs coming in, no vapes, you know. And that meeting place is still there, still at the same church. In fact, it's the longest running meeting location in Washington County next to Mr. Clean on Friday nights, Friday nights. So it's been at the same meeting location for 25 years probably. But this new thing that came out of the blue, this whole vape thing, you know, could that have gotten us kicked out of the... I mean, we were on thin ice a couple other times for other reasons. You know, there was neighbors that couldn't get past the parking lot because people were blocking them. And, you know, but getting connected and being a part of that home group, I relearned how to apply traditions. You know, also, by the way, if you're like me and you had the experience of kind of backing away from the bountiful harvest of Narcotics Anonymous recovery, and you come back up to the table, I did NA the biggest favor I could have done. I learned how to be a member for a year. I didn't do, hey, we need you back in service. No, you don't. I'm breaking doors down and spitting in my kid's face. Fucking last thing you need is me at a service meeting, you know? I spent a whole year, not group secretary, not group treasurer, not GSR, where I get to go to area and pontificate on all the things I think I know. It was funny because I knew what to do first when I reconnected and recommitted. I got in front of the door to hug people when they were coming in. Because that's what people did for me whenever I got clean, right? That's a good way. It's a great way to meet people. It's a good way to reestablish your we. And they were looking at me like I'm crazy. There were like people that had been going to that meeting for years, and I hadn't been there. And like, they're coming back because they were just there a week ago. And there's Kevin. Hey, welcome to the Choice. Welcome back. Good to see you. Like, who the fuck is this guy? Where's he coming from? You know. I wasn't doing it for them. I was doing it for me. I so desperately needed to reestablish a relationship with Narcotics Anonymous. You know, when I had that 20-year clean anniversary, my whole we got together. Bob, John, Scott, and Ron. All four of them. And Gary? No. No, you were using. Sorry. And a guy named Gary T. Did I say Gary T? He always gives me a hard time because he says, I don't know, we have a thing about speaking and talking about mentioning names, whatever. But if anyone gets this recording, play it for Gary T. And just know that he was thought about here today. But that was my whole we, man. Four or five people. Fucking 20 years clean. Spitting in my kid's face, breaking down doors in my house, and I was surrounded by this... You know, and I remember going to get that key tag done, and man, I felt like a fraud, honest to God. I saw people up there getting 30 days clean, and they were surrounded by a we. I didn't have what they had. You know, that's what the guy was talking last night, and I know my experience, you know, this is a just for today program. I can't say clean today on yesterday's recovery. And when I would look at those people getting those key tags, and I'm getting about 20 years, I felt like a fraud, man. So I learned how to be a home group member again. I learned the value of the ultimate authority as God expressing himself in our group conscience. And by the way, I was quick to point this out to a friend of mine who their particular walk isn't like, I guess, God-specific. Is that a good way to say it? And when I was sharing with them a few months back over a slice of pizza, they live in California. They moved out there some 17 years ago to take a job that they love and that we love them for sometimes. But I was saying, hey, by the way, I didn't put the word he in tradition too. I didn't. You know, himself and our group conscious. But after the events that took place in my life last November, I understand, and I'm sure glad that it's in there, and I'll just leave it at that. You can draw your own conclusions. I didn't put those words in there. That's the God that I connect with. You know? It's in the Narcotics Anonymous basic text, so we have to be able to talk about it, right? It's in there. We voted on it. The traditions, the steps. You know, the third tradition is perhaps the most powerful principle, I think, and concept that we have in Narcotics Anonymous. It is one that has just transformed my life by understanding it. And it truly, truly makes me, has led me to feel valuable as a person, as an addict, as a human being, as a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And it basically says that no one here is better than anybody else. You know, we have an even playing field in Narcotics Anonymous. And that is desire. That's the only requirement, is that we have that desire to, you know, to stop using. It don't matter what we used. It don't matter who we use with. It don't matter where we're from. It don't matter how much money we have in our pocket. It don't matter if it took you a $70,000 vehicle to get to the meeting, you know, and it took someone else a bus pass, guess what? You're both on equal playing fields. You know, all walks of life, all manifestations of the addicted person, which it talks about in our symbol, the universal program. It's an equalizer. You know, and just think about why that works so well for us, because addiction was an equalizer. I sat next to, stole money off of, got drugs from, gave drugs to people from all walks of life. So the only possible solution for us has to be a program that follows that same pattern, right? And no one, I certainly learned this a hard way earlier on. None of us has any right to judge someone's desire. If someone's walking through that door, that's some glimmer of desire. I don't care if the glimmer comes from a piece of paper they got to get signed, or a beautiful wife that they don't want to lose, or whatever it is. There's that desire when you're walking in the door. You had to have some degree, but I know I did. I was scared. I was intimidated by all of you. But just a little piece of me wanted to stop hurting and wanted to find a better way to live than the voice that was telling me I don't belong here and this ain't for me. And that's what that desire is. And none of us is capable of measuring someone else's desire. I truly believe that. And that's a bedrock principle of our fellowship, you know, and at the same time, that's all that's needed for this to work for me, is that desire. That's all that's required of me. You know, I don't have to make commitment. You know, it talks in the basic text about that third tradition about the freedom to come and go as we please. You know, I wanted to hold people here and tie them down. You know. It don't work for us like that. If we don't have it, I can give someone hope. I can give them love. I could help remove barriers. I could give them a ride. But if an addict, you know, it says it in there real eloquently. You know, you can pray on them, beat them over the head. You know, an addict that does not want to stop using will not stop using. You know, that's the nature of this disease that we have. And I suspect that that's partly why the fellowship works as well as it does for us, because with that desire, all things are possible. If we were all a bunch of folks that were bound to this place, well, we have an example of that, you know. We're not supposed to use in jail, are we? What happens there? Not a very loving environment across the board. I've been in rooms in jails where I have felt love, you know, and it's been in Narcotics Anonymous related love. But so that's to me, you know, why this program works so well and why it's powerful. And that third tradition is like almost like the core of the sunshine that everything else emits out of, is that the fact that we're all equal here. And that's helped me in my life so tremendously, you know, to know that I'm not any better or any worse than my fellow man or woman. You know, and everyone deserves respect. Everyone deserves dignity. Everyone. And that's how I was treated here. Sure, we falter. I watch people judge other people here and run people, you know, run at them and tell them things. And, you know, that's you know, we have steps to take care of those things if we stick around here long enough. But the fellowship itself does not judge us. The fellowship does not close the door. The fellowship keeps the door open wide. You know, and I guess, you know, the last little topic there with the fourth tradition is autonomy. You know, I mentioned earlier that, like, I don't think we could break Narcotics Anonymous. You know, if we were able to stand here and get here, despite all the horrible things we did to ourselves, what can we possibly do to the fellowship that's going to end it? You know, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And there's a whole lot of people get into the fourth tradition, and there was words that disappeared from a previous version, a previous form of our book, and there's people that, there's a resentment meeting tonight. There's burn the logs of resentment or something it says. A lot of resentment meeting. And there's folks that hang on to that, those words. And I'll just briefly, because I have the podium, right? So it's my time. Maybe they won't ask me again. That'd be okay too. You know, those words that stated something about, you know, what NA is. See, we're groups. The group is part of NA, but we're also a fellowship. We're a collection of groups, right? And there's this definition in the text about that, and that there was this notion that everything else, if it's not a group only, it's not Narcotics Anonymous. All else is not NA, according to that version of thought. And to this I say, people who know me have heard me say this before, Burger King is not Narcotics Anonymous, right? We can all agree on that. Starbucks is not Narcotics Anonymous, neither is Walmart. Neither is a specific kind of church. Neither is a NASCAR racing team. They're not Narcotics Anonymous. How dare someone tell me that my H&I commitment is not part of Narcotics Anonymous? That it's not NA. It's all else is not NA. It's not a home group. It's part of Narcotics. It's part of my Narcotics Anonymous experience. And for people that want to, you know, 30 years later continue to burn the logs of resentment, they're welcome to do that. We love you anyway. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful that you've loved me whenever I've carried my resentments around here. And it's a beautiful program. It's a beautiful day. I'm so happy to be here with you. I'm looking forward to hearing my friend Greg share. And it's so good to see him this morning. And that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin. The second speaker I'd like to introduce, Greg M. from the, Surrender and Service?
Surrender to Survive.
Oh, Surrender to Survive, group of NA in the CWANA area in the country.
I'm an addict. My name's Greg. Thank you for sharing. I didn't know who I'd be doing this with until I got up here this morning, and then with all due respect to the principle of anonymity, I was like, I don't know why the fuck they asked me to do it. There's, you know, capable hands already on deck, and I was listening, and I get it now. It kind of makes sense. My experience with these traditions is. My experience. There's going to be some differences. And that's the beautiful thing about, you know, group conscience, is that we bring our different perspectives to the table, voice them as honestly as possible, and whatever comes out because at that point it's out of our hands. I was also taught that, this, in a nutshell, traditions 1 through 5 are what we do. Traditions 6 through 11 are warnings. And tradition 12 is our style. Like, that's our, you know, MO. When I was asked to come up here, I don't know why they gave me an option. I was like, well, I can get real opinionated when I talk about these things. So I'm like, don't give me the later ones. Just give me the earlier ones because you really can't, you know, just give me something I can't fuck up. And here we are. So for me, I had to take a look at some things when it comes to my recovery process. I was taught that. I need two legs to walk. The steps are one leg. The traditions are the other. I was taught that, if I'm only working steps, I'm only working half a program. I was taught that the traditions matter. And I get to kind of use service work as kind of a petri dish to learn them watch them grow and practice them, and then I get to take them home, and I have to apply them. And I was also taught that the steps in the traditions, like, okay, so we're taking the steps. Well, the step has a flat part and it has an upward part. And the traditions are the bridge for that angle. And when I apply things in that flow, and again, this is my perspective and what I've taught and what I've been taught and what I practice. When I apply them as such, things become complete. I'm not out of balance and I'm not tripping over stuff, and I feel centered in my life, which means that the second tradition comes after the second step. So in the second step, I'm introduced to this thing called a higher power. And I learned that you know, a higher power takes many forms and many shapes and arrives in many methods. I have to define what that is, and that a higher power and God are not always the same thing. And the second tradition talks about God, though, which is the source. And if I want to understand, like, group conscience, and I'm not someone who got clean and was, like, all about the Jesus thing, and I didn't really wrap my head around this whole God thing, and, you know, I was real grateful for the good orderly direction piece when I got here. And one night, though, I was in a meeting, and it was one of those meetings where it kind of went off the rails completely. Like, the topic was, like, I don't know, acceptance or something like that. It ended up being about fucking resentments towards your ex who's in the rooms or some shit like that. And of course, you know, that happened with, like, the second person that shared, and then it just kind of, the meeting took a life of its own on. I left that night, and you know, I go home, and I used to do like my my 11 step usually ended up at the end of the day. Or I did a lot of that, where I kind of, you know, 10 step, 11 step thing. And I was like, shit. Because I'd heard a lot of things that night that I really needed to hear. I had seen a lot of things in that meeting go on. It just helped me, help provide some clarity. And I was like, so that's what group conscience is. Like, a whole bunch of people shared honestly. And because of that sharing, something else formed that was not intended, not in the format, something else formed that took on a life of its own and ended up being exactly what I needed on that given night. And that's what we look for, at least that's what I was taught, is what we're looking for in that group conscience is that missing piece that no one of us is capable of bringing to the table individually. But collectively, something else happens. That's like a real powerful moment when you actually get to witness that and when you can recognize it. And still have, you know, I mean, how many meetings do you go to where it goes off the rails? You know, it could happen on any given night. And that's part of, like, you know, what keeps my enthusiasm for the program is you never know what the fuck's going to happen here. Having said that, ultimate authority being loving God as He makes express Himself through His group conscience. So it also goes, the second tradition also goes on to say, our leaders are but trust and servants, they do not govern. What are leaders are, well, I'm not real, okay, I'm going to try my best to keep my opinions out of this. When someone is in service of NA, speaking, home group, coffee maker, those are very tangible demonstrations of service in the fellowship. It's a transferable skill because, you know, when I go home and I'm a parent, that's service. It's a role I have to play, whether they're my kids or someone else's kids. You know what I mean? Like I'm doing a job. It ain't, you know, it's not like I feel like watching my kid play fucking Minecraft at midnight on a Friday night when I got to get up at 5 a.m. to drive up here. But it's, you know, it's the hand that's dealt. I'm grateful for that opportunity because by all rights, I should be in a coffin 15 years ago, at least. Having said that, what I learned about trusted service is basically through GSR. Because I was one of those dudes that I When I got clean, I felt that, like, I was so sick, I needed to do so much extra, because if I didn't, I'd relapse. So I took a GSR commitment as early as the group would let me. And what I was told, I went to area, and I have a bit of a mouth, and I like to tell people why they're wrong. And when I came back, some other people in my home group, they knew people at area, and I had some explaining to do. And what I was told is that a trusted servant, what we are trusting you with is to carry our message to a specific destination, our message, not yours, in our name. So what I'm being trusted with is to keep my shit out of the picture and do what the ultimate authority has deemed as the necessary task. And I thought about that, and I, you know, this is why I'm not such a big fan of, like, me personally being involved in, like, region, for example, because I have a lot of opinions. And I've been around for a minute now, so I think I know something. And I have enough clean time that I think that provides me some kind of badge that you're not going to argue with me. Which isn't the case, but you know, that's my shit that I have to work through. It's very difficult for me to go to certain arenas and not be able to say, like, look, this is what my groups has determined is the proper course of action. This is how we're going to vote on this. And not add anything on to that when I personally am in disagreement. However, that is what this tradition is asking me to do. Whether I like it or not, it's what the group chose. The group, you know, my home group starts at 7 o'clock. I don't really like 7 o'clock. That doesn't really work for me. I can bring that up in a group business meeting and request that we change it, but I know it's going to get shot down. So, you know, I accept it. And I surrender to it. And at that point, like, the struggle is no longer mine. Because, you know, there's a line in our basic text where it talks about the importance of spirit rotation in service too. You know, actually, I'm not sure it's there anymore. But it talks about, you know, at some point, you know, our elder members, they, you know, it's time for us to step aside and let the young bucks kind of step up. And that's vital. Because in doing service, like, it's not always great to have a whole bunch of people who are 110% sure they're right about everything in a room together. That's usually where you end up getting chairs thrown at each other and stuff like that, which, you know, has happened. You know, but that spirit of rotation is vital. And it shows me that, like, a lot of the wisdom, if you want to call it that, that I've gained through the recovery process has come because of, you know, not knowing what the fuck I was doing. And because of that, I learned those lessons and I take them home with me. And that has enhanced my life, enhanced my recovery. And it would be selfish and rude of me to rob someone else of that opportunity just because I don't have anything else to do on a Sunday morning or a Saturday afternoon. So, you know, again, spirit of rotation. Another bad thing about putting me and him together is we both like to talk. So, having said that, so we go, you know, second tradition, third step, third tradition. One of the meat and bones of my third tradition, basically I just, you know, initially when I got here, I thought that meant we just couldn't kick anybody out, which I wasn't too happy about. Cause there are a lot of people I didn't really want to be here with me. You know, over the course of time, what I've come to learn, is through the writing on third tradition that I've done. You know, I was guided by my sponsor, and the meat and bones of that tradition is what are the rights, privileges, and responsibilities of NA membership. And I got a lot out of that question because I didn't understand it, so I had to humble myself and ask for help. And the response I got was, "What do you need from meetings? What do you get from meetings? And how do you give that back?" Like, my basic rights are to be able to come here, share freely, share honestly, know it's not going to go anywhere, and you know, put myself in a position to receive feedback and, you know, after the meeting, you know, or when it's appropriate, and get something from it. You know, like, and what I get is the privilege, because I don't have to be here. I can leave anytime I want. I didn't have to show up today. I get to. You know, because of NA, and solely because of NA, I have a life that I can actually be relatively proud of. I've gotten to a point where, on most days, I am that acceptable, responsible, productive member of society that I thought was total bullshit when I first got here. I thought that was for guys, you know, that were, you know, that walked around and, like, I thought they levitated into the meetings and shit. You know, but that, like, that's the privilege. My responsibility as a home group member and as a member writ large is to give that back. Like, okay, and I'm going to steal this off a predecessor, but it's applicable right now. It's about the only thing running through my head. I owe my clean date to service, flat out. If it wasn't for service, I'd have never found you, because you wouldn't have met. Because someone wouldn't have opened the door at the first meeting. No one would have chaired the meeting. No one would have taken the time to write the literature. No one would have taken time to write the format. All of that is due to service from someone I've never met. Who am I to not give that back to the next person that walks through the door? I owe. And the better my life gets, the more I owe. So I have an obligation to give that shit back. So, you know, when talks about tolerance in the third tradition, like, you know, my early recovery, especially the first 5 years, was not a graceful process. You know, I pissed off a lot of people, and I spoke out the side of my neck, and I would tell people with 20 years why they didn't understand my issues. You know, like they didn't understand me as a person. You know, completely ignorant to the fact that they knew the disease of addiction and they knew what addicts do way better than I did. Because I was the last person to assign blame to myself. You know, or take responsibility for my personal actions and that sort of thing. So the amount of tolerance I have to give to people nowadays is just as much as I got, which is a shit ton. When they're fucking vaping in the goddamn meeting, looking like they're Puff the Magic Dragon, you know, or whatever it may be, or talking to some chick that, you know, is just on like a carousel of guys hitting on her. You know, like, I have to practice some tolerance. Having said that, I do not have to accept their actions, and I do have the ability to say something. Because people called me on my shit when I was acting out of character, when I was doing something stupid. I have that responsibility. Not that I'm the fucking NAPD, but I had people say, hey, dickhead, do you want her to stay clean or not? Give her some time. Hey, how's that writing on your step going? Oh, not so good. I've been real busy lately. You don't have a job. What the fuck are you doing? You know what I mean? So like I said, there is a certain level of responsibility that comes with this. And I believe wholeheartedly all it takes to enter the room is membership, or is that desire. But it also tells us in the basic text that desire without action is fantasy. So there has to be some footwork put in, like membership, you know, and I get, you know, one of our predecessors used to like to say that, membership is not automatic in a sense, because if you don't have a home group, you're not a member. Desire is best expressed through service work in a home group. So that's the standard I kind of put on it nowadays. You know, I just went through a period where I didn't have a home group for a couple months because I was kind of scouting, and like I had some changes to my work schedule, and you know, my old home group that I'd been a part of for 10 years was, or you know, 11 years, well, was no longer going to fit my schedule. So I had to scout around and find something else. And that's a very unsettling period of time because I'd gotten real comfortable where I was and I had to make the change, and now I'm somewhere else and I'm not really too fucking happy about it, but it is what it is. And part of the reason I'm not happy about it is because I don't know what my purpose is there yet. But I know it's what fits. It's been group conscious by my family, that's a good meeting for me to go to. And it's been group conscious by the guys I sponsor, so I get a little more face time with them than I used to, which is a good thing. Like I said, that group conscience thing, now that I'm thinking about it, that's part of the reason why I'm on the schedule I'm on today, because, I learned how to do group conscience decisions in a home group. I also learned that, me telling my wife what she's cooking for dinner that night doesn't really fly so well. We need to have a discussion about that and kind of take a vote. I just went through a remodel in my house, and when we were, picking out stuff, tried to get everybody involved so my kids weren't walking around Home Depot pissed off and pouting the whole time because they wanted to play on their phones at home all day. I'm like, hey, why don't you help me pick out a color? What do you think about this kind of stuff? And everybody took votes. Now, we didn't end up painting dinosaurs on the walls, but, it got a little creative and it looked different than I thought it was going to, and everybody seems pretty happy about it. That's a group conscious process there. Again, desire when it comes to relationships. If people are, people give a shit about me, they call. If I care about someone, I call. I show up. I make time. That's how I know they care. There's actions behind it. And then the fourth tradition, I'll touch on this real quick and I'll wrap up so we're not going over too much. The principle of autonomy is phenomenal. When I got clean, I was a very, very, very codependent person. If you felt shitty, I felt guilty that I didn't feel as shitty as you did about your problems. And the principle of autonomy has shown me that, with groups, we work with what we're given. Meetings don't have, if the meeting doesn't have a whole shitload of clean time, probably a good idea for it to be a literature meeting. If it has the wisdom and experience and the benefit of having predecessors there, then it's a speaker meeting or a general discussion meeting works best. We work with our assets because, again, four tradition comes after a four step, assets and liabilities. What are our assets? What are our liabilities? Okay, let's work with the assets. Let's not do the liability piece. And the principle of autonomy shows me that, when I take that home, I am my own person. I have my own feelings. I do not have to let your bullshit get into me and affect me. I'm capable of practicing compassion, empathy, understanding, tolerance, all the principles that the steps offer, but I do not need to work on your problem harder than you. That's enabling. And that kills people. I'm going to leave the history stuff out of this because I'm doing my best to keep the opinions out of this. I will say when it comes to our history and the difference in literature, what I can tell you is that the perspective I was taught by people that helped write this stuff was basically, and this is the conclusion that I've come to about it, and this is what I will give to you guys. If you understand the principle of group conscience, and if you believe that the third tradition entitles everybody, every addict, to a voice in the decision, a group conscience can only be achieved when that bar is met, where all it takes to have the vote is a desire. Because once you're elected or nominated, you are no longer within third tradition realm. You are now in almost like borderline eighth tradition thing. So if you believe that, then the only place you can get a group conscience is at the home group level. It's the only place. Everything else is an extension or a mechanism. That's what I was taught. I know I'm now in the minority with that belief, and I can accept that. But again, with the principle of autonomy, I don't have to fucking change it just so I can agree with you all the time. We can agree to disagree. First tradition, and that's a beautiful thing. As some of the people I have the utmost respect for in this program, that current and past that have since passed on. We have had some serious core disagreements about how stuff goes. But it doesn't change the fact that we're both just addicts trying to get another fucking day. And I will not throw someone out of my life because they have a different perspective on things. I just know what has worked for me, what I've seen work for others, and I've gotten to see some of what doesn't work. And I'm actually sitting here, like, you know, I spent the last 10 minutes, like, honestly, mildly envious of the faith demonstrated. I can't say that I have that same thing, because I was taught that traditions are ties that bind us together. I've seen people do things that sever those ties.
Thank you.
And I think if enough of them get severed, I don't know. We haven't got there yet, and I hope we never do. Because I love this place. And I love you guys, and I don't want to talk anymore. So I don't want us to keep this late. So I'm going to shut up now. Thank you for letting me share.